You're listening to Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, into hour two on this Tuesday game day, Flames and the Anaheim Ducks. Flames looking to close out their homestand with another victory. I'll tell you your goaltending matchup tonight. Lucas Dostal going for the Ducks. Jacob Markstrom gets another start for the Flames. Rasmus Anderson good to go after blocking that shot against the Kings and missing practice on Monday. Still no Andrew Mangiapane. He did skate but will not play Tuesday against Anaheim. 6 o'clock, Flames warm-up with the one and only Pat Steinberg. He'll get you set for the Flames and Ducks 7 with Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson on the call right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. All things Flames and Ducks in hour one of the program today. Heard from head coach Ryan Huska, Jonathan Huberto, and Martin Pospisil, as well as a look at the opposition with our pal Alexis Downey. If you missed any of it, check us out on the podcast, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. Podcasts go up after every hour finishes here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. So to come a little bit later, we will take a look at the NHL scoreboard and what's coming up later on the NHL ice away from the Flames and the Ducks. But we're kicking off hour two, all things Toronto Blue Jays. We'll chat with our pal Sho Ali from Sportsnet 590 The Fan in Toronto coming up in just a few moments. But let's get you caught up on a disappointing start to the series against the Astros. Shan has today's Jays report.
Time now for the Jays report on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
I'm Shan Vergie here with your first Jays report of the season, and I can't think of a worse way to start because
Blue Jays trying to avoid being no-hit for the eighth time in their franchise's history. The 2-2. Pope to the mound. It bounces to second. Altuve over to first. It's a no-hitter for Ronel Blanco.
Yes, just five games into the season, the Blue Jays have been on the wrong end of a no-hitter. It's the first no-hitter of the young MLB season and the second one against the Jays in as many seasons. Ronel Blanco made his eighth career start for the Astros last night, threw 105 pitches with a strike rate of 70% and finished with seven strikeouts. Blanco is known for his fastball but added a changeup to the arsenal in the offseason, and that was his go-to pitch throughout the game. The Astros got their first win of the season thanks to his masterclass performance. John Schneider spoke post-game about the 10-0 loss in Houston.
A no-hitter is an outlier, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I think that we're doing all right with where we hope to be, you know, in terms of what the offense is supposed to do. Tonight is just, you know, it's one of those nights. You know, you give credit to a guy to do something really, really hard to accomplish, and a loss is still a loss. You know, you move on to tomorrow.
The Jays can really only go up from here with Game 2 scheduled for tonight at 6:10 p.m. Jose Berríos on the mound for the Bluebirds, and Framber Valdez gets the nod for the Astros. Valdez has allowed a .221 average and 86 at-bats against this Toronto roster with 20 punch-outs and just three home runs. Berríos is looking to build off his strong start from opening day against Tampa Bay, where he allowed just two earned runs in six innings with six Ks and just one batter walk. I'm Shan Vergie, and that was your Jays report.
Thank you, Shan, for that. We'll have Jays reports for you throughout the Jays season right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. But for now, more on the Toronto Blue Jays. We head down the Atlas Beach and Sports Bar guest hotline. Welcome in our pal from Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Jays pregame and more. Sho Ali joining us this afternoon. Sho, how are you, man?
Good, Logan. How are you?
I'm doing good, buddy, except for... I have to pin the no-hitter, frankly, on you for tweeting it out last night and bringing it to its inception. I don't know why you would tempt us with that, and there you go. It wound up happening.
See, I was thinking if I said it out loud, it wouldn't happen. It's like, oh, he's going to throw the no-hitter. He definitely won't throw the no-hitter. And unfortunately, for the first time pretty much ever, the jinx did not come through, and Ronel Blanco did, in fact, no-hit the Blue Jays. I got to say, I was shocked that no one really adjusted anything against – I mean, he was dealing, obviously. You got to tip your cap at some point. But, I mean, like, no one adjusted against the changeup. Like, that changeup was filthy. And he was locating all night. But, gosh, I mean, like, Springer, I mean, he took a pair of walks, I suppose. But Vladdy and Varsho and Kirk and all of these guys we spent so much time talking about in the offseason, none of them really adjusted last night, which was kind of bizarre to me.
Yeah, it was strange to see, and I was curious, you know, just going off of that no-hitter last night, how did you look at it more? Was it more so the Jays and their bats not getting things done last night, or do we give more credit for the no-hitter to what Ronald Blanco was able to do?
You know, I probably will give Blanco the tip of the cap only because this is the guy who he's the fifth starter for the Astros. He barely beat out a handful of other guys like Brandon Bielak, for example, to even be the team's fifth starter. And then I want to say, like, he made the team on the very last day of spring training. And then I think he was announced that, like, his wife had given birth that day. And then, like 5 days into the season, he tosses a no-hitter. So, I mean, that's a pretty good start to your 2024 season if you're the Astros, certainly if you're Blanco himself. But I don't know. The way the bats were going last night, definitely he was keeping them off balance, but it was one of those games where, like, even if the Astros bats hadn't gotten to Bowden Francis early, even if the game had been like 2-0 or something, it still feels like it would have been a no-hitter.
How are we feeling about the Jays? It's a small sample size, but it feels like we've seen a lot of ups and downs just 5 games into the season so far. How are we sort of evaluating this very early sample size from the Bluebirds?
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because the sample size, it's strange because I'm definitely a proponent of saying it's early and a small sample size myself. But at the same time, and I totally get why people feel this way. A lot of people say, well, the sample size is not 5 games. Sample size is actually 167 games, or really like 169 games if you include all the 162 plus the 2 playoff games from last year plus the 5 games this year. So
sure.
I totally get that because, like, you know, you and I have talked about this certainly at the end of last year and in the lead up in the spring this year about the changes the team has made. And Justin Turner had a really great game to wrap up the series in Tampa on Sunday. But, I mean, there haven't been a lot of other changes. Obviously a bad time for Bo to be out of the lineup with the neck spasms as well. But, gosh, it does feel like a lot of what you're seeing from this team, what you're experiencing, especially because they've been such extremes, right? Like, it's not as though there have been that many close games. It was an 8-2 win, an 8-2 loss, a 5-1 loss, a 9-2 win, and then a 10-0 loss. Like, none of these games have been really all that close. So I'm not really sure if the extremes are really a good way to judge the offense, but it does feel like it's very similar to last year, which obviously I don't think anyone really wants any part of.
Yeah, I was going to say the names haven't changed much. I know we will point to, you know, Ernie Clement is there and Daniel Vogelbach, and Justin Turner's been off to a pretty good start for his Jays career. But I think the thing that a lot of Jays fans I've heard from show the worry is if the names haven't changed, well, then the approach needs to change, right? How you
right.
go about creating offense and doing what you do on a daily basis needs to change. And I'll throw it out there again. I know it's a small sample size, but that doesn't seem to have changed much either.
Well, it's interesting because Don Mattingly's new role, and we were doing Jays Talk on the weekend and someone called in about this, which I thought was an interesting conversation because the question was from the caller, like, how much credit do you give to Don Mattingly? And this was after they won 9-2. And I thought to myself, well, you got to give the guy like a little bit of credit, right? Because they're giving him this new title of offensive coordinator. They've brought up the hitting coach from Buffalo, Matt Haig. They've moved other guys around, even if they are keeping Guillermo Martinez, the hitting coach from last year. So, you know, have all these new coaches, and a lot of it they said in the offseason was actually done in an effort to reduce the amount of cooks in the kitchen, so to speak. So I want to give credit to Don Mattingly, but at the same time, like, when it comes to hitting approaches and what these guys are doing and making adjustments in game and so on, I mean, you didn't really see any of that last night, right? And again, like, John Schneider said this after the game yesterday, and I think this is correct. As annoying as it is to hear, it is correct to say that a no-hitter is an outlier of sorts because, you know, if every team plays 162 games, there are several thousand games that get played over the course of an MLB season. And what, by the end of the season, there'll probably be like 20 no-hitters or 25 no-hitters or whatever it might be. So it, I think it is accurate to call it an outlier. But at the same time, for him to follow it up by saying we're okay where the offense is at this point in the season, I totally get why it rubs some people the wrong way. But, you know, because truthfully, it has been so feast or famine with this team. It doesn't really feel like you can get an accurate bead on where this team is going offensively.
Yeah, and I think that's, for a lot of people, I think that was kind of the surprise when John Schneider took over the job full-time, was I think a lot, and maybe you saw this differently, Show. I thought John Schneider was going to come in as sort of the firmer hand when it came to calling it like he saw it with this Jays team, maybe more so than we had seen with previous managers, but he's kind of walked that line very well as a manager, if you will, between, you know, not wanting to, at least publicly, and we know that there are different conversations that happen that we're not privy to, you know, he certainly walks that line, at least with the media, about not going too far one way or another when it comes to criticizing or praising his team, at least with us.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Like, I don't think, I'm not going to go out there and say, like, oh, it's all John Schneider's fault, because I also think the way baseball is these days, so much of it is not in the manager's hands, you know what I mean? Like, so much of it is in the hands of certainly the GM, certainly the other guys, the bench coaches, and all the other coaches that are there in the dugout, but also just the people you don't really hear from a lot, generally speaking, like the high performance department. Like, and also, do I love that's the way baseball is going? Like, not really. And obviously, some organizations it works for better than others. Like, it clearly works out pretty well, like on the whole, for the Rays or for the Dodgers or for other organizations that are like really, really leaning heavily into the analytics. But with John Schneider specifically, it's true. He's always kind of straddled that line between kind of embracing baseball cliches while also, you know, not saying a whole lot. I think it's funny because the whole organization is kind of somewhat opaque, which I don't have a huge issue with, but it does mean you kind of have to parse a little bit through coach speak when it comes to trying to discern what's going to happen next, essentially.
For the rest of this series against the Astros, I guess before I get too far in there, Bowden Francis gets the start. I don't know that we're super critical one way or another. I think that for a bottom of the rotation guy, I thought it was okay. It's hard to – I always find it hard, Show, to be too hard on the pitcher when the team didn't put up any runs. It always seems to be – I feel like I'm going too hard in on a guy when he didn't get any run support.
No, I think that's fair. And the thing, too, is – and it sounds so wild to say, but he gave up 7 earned runs. And the reason I don't think it was that bad of an outing is that he still got – he still notched 6 or 7 strikeouts last night. And the nice thing about that was that pretty much all of Bowden Francis's off-speed pitches looked great. Like, he got Alex Bregman to strike out 3 times, I want to say, and I think almost all of them were on the curveball.
Yep.
His curveball looked great. The Astros last night, against Francis specifically, because Yenesis Cabrera came in, and now he's suspended, and so it was a good thing they got some work in for him. They probably did that on purpose, because now, after he pitched a couple of days in that, certainly in the Rays series, and then yesterday with the suspension, now he's just going to be quote-unquote down, but that probably would have been the case even if he hadn't been suspended. So I think that works out pretty well for him. But as far as Francis goes, all the runs the Astros scored off of him basically all came off the fastball. Like, almost all of them came off the four-seam fastball. So it kind of makes me think, okay, next time, will he try and locate the fastball in a different location in the zone? Some of them were right on the edges of the zone. Some of them were above the zone. So I actually think it's not a lot of the outcomes last night have a lot to do with Francis playing poorly, but maybe more guys like Kyle Tucker and Jose Altuve and Yennier Diaz all having very, very good ABs. But, you know, you want to see, I think, next time out where he locates the fastball and probably just less fastball usage overall, which I know is a tough ask because literally every pitcher in Major League Baseball uses their fastball to kind of get over and make the off-speed stuff work a little bit better. But you're right. Like, I actually don't have a lot of criticism for Bowden Francis when the bats didn't give him any help. And on top of that, it was just a team in the Astros that had started 0-4 that desperately needed to get a win. And I mean, they had the best possible case scenario happen for them in that they blanked the Blue Jays with a no hitter and all of their guys hit essentially. So no, I'm not super worried. I think Bowden France's next start will look a lot better.
I did want to touch on a couple positives with you. I think a lot of Jays fans have been happy so far with the return for Justin Turner. And I've heard, you know, a couple of our colleagues, you know, Shai Davidi's mentioned it a couple of times, but sort of the influence on guys like Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero when it comes to how they're using their at-bats at the top of the lineup and setting guys up further down. What have you made of at least a couple games now with Justin Turner and Blue Jays Blue?
Yeah, I think you're right, because when you look at how veterans like acquit themselves, I suppose, it's kind of like twofold, right? It's certainly how they play at the plate slash in the field, if they are in the field, and then certainly what their locker room presence, their clubhouse presence is like. And it's like that for every sport. That's not just a baseball thing. Like when teams in hockey go out and bring a grizzled vet in, you want to know what he's going to be like character-wise in the locker room. And I don't think it's anything different for Justin Turner. I've heard a lot from a lot of different people that Turner is not the kind of guy who needs to like stand on a soapbox in a clubhouse and yell to get people's attention. Like people kind of tend to gravitate towards him. He's kind of a quieter sort of leader. And I said this on JSTOC on the weekend, but I remember when Turner signed with the Blue Jays and he went on with Blair and Barker on their podcast before they came back full time. And I remember distinctly Turner was like, I think it was Barker asked him about what he wants to see from some of the younger guys. Like, and I think one of the guys Kevin pointed out was certainly Vladdy. And JT specifically said about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. that he wanted to see less from Vladdy. He didn't want to see him swinging and expanding and doing all these things that we've seen Vladdy do in the last couple of years. And I know it kind of rings a little hollow when you get no hit and he's the final out of the game yesterday. But at the same time, I have liked what I've seen from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I mean, in the Rays series, he took 5 walks in the first 4 games of the season. I think that's tremendous, because if for Vladdy, it means that he's not expanding, and he's gotten got a couple of times, certainly, like even the best hitters will, but that he's not expanding the zone. He's really only limiting his swings to pitches he feels he can hit, not even only in the strike zone, but in specific parts of the strike zone. If you look at the heat map of where he's swinging, and again, last night notwithstanding, it's looked pretty good so far. So if he can keep that up over the course of 162, in addition to his swing mechanics, you know, he might not be hitting 450-foot bombs every single time out, but it's a good place to start, because, I mean, you and I talked about this last year. One of the reasons you get so frustrated with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is because you know he can do it. Like, we've literally seen him have a great eye at the plate. You've seen him with great plate discipline and great power and all these things, and you just haven't seen him do it so consistently. So if he can do that and string it together with great plate discipline like we've seen in 2024, I think good things are in store for him.
What's the vibe been on Jay's talk? I know it's early, and I know there's probably some frustration that stems from the offseason and the fact that it didn't go the way a lot of Jays fans were hoping it's been, but what's kind of been the general consensus around the team early that you've heard from fans?
You know, I think it has been a mixed bag because of the extremes we've talked about having been seen in the last, let's say, 5 games, but I do think there is a certain kind of wait and see, because, you know, a lengthy road trip to start the season, and it's not as though they're playing the road trip. Like, these games aren't coming against, like, the A's or the Nationals,
sure,
or, like, other teams that are, you know, not so good. It's against 3 teams that you expect to be very good, right? I mean, the Rays were in the playoffs last year. The Astros won their division, albeit on the last day of the season. And then the Yankees did miss the playoffs, but only by a handful of games. And the games against the Yankees all season last year were really tough. And this was a year where they get Juan Soto, and you think they're going to be a much better team, and they have been so far. So it's not as though they're playing pushover teams. And so I think these 10 games, I think a lot of fans, at least this is anecdotal through Jay's talk and texts and calls and so on, people do seem to be giving the team the benefit of the doubt. Having said that, I think the appetite for how long that benefit of the doubt will last, Logan, is I don't think it's very long. Let's put it that way. Like, if they come back home and it's like a 3-7 start through 10 games, and then you don't perform against the Mariners in the home series here in Toronto, I think the appetite will be a lot hungrier, let's put it that way.
Well, fingers crossed we get another strong Jose Berríos start tonight, and that record evens out a bit before they head home. I know still some time before they get there, but looking forward to it. Show great stuff as always, man. I always appreciate you making some time for us, eh?
Yeah, anytime, Logan.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon, pal.
See you, man.
Shawali joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline this afternoon. Jays and the Astros, game two of their series from Houston Tuesday night, 6:10 first pitch on Sportsnet 1. Jose Berríos versus Framber Valdez. Berríos 1-0, picked up the season opening win for the Jays in a win over Tampa Bay. And perhaps the water's calm now, Shan. But I wouldn't want to be doing show's job on Jays Talk afterwards.
No.
On the call-in show if things continue this way for Toronto.
And there is a portion of the Toronto fan base that wants them to be bad so that they can get mad about it. And that's certainly something you can get mad about, because 5 games into the season with a new offensive plan and you don't even get a hit. One guy walks twice. That's George Springer. Vladdy's been good to start the year. He had 3 strikeouts and was the last out in that game. It's just, that was a frustrating game. At the same time, it's a talented Jays team, and I think part of the part that sucks is that they play in the AL East, which is, you could argue, the best division in professional sports. You could.
Yeah, I mean, even an optimistic Jays fan, I mean, Yankees are good, Orioles are good, Red Sox, probably as good as you are. I mean, do you ever count Tampa Bay out of things? I know they've been off to a rocky start, but you just got a split with them. So, yeah, it's a really tough spot to be in. And I'm the thing that's frustrated me, and I know it's 5 games and it's way too early out of 162 to get upset. It doesn't look any different than last year.
No.
And I know the names aren't different, but as I said with show, at least show me you're going about your business differently. You're going to be aggressive on the base paths, or you're going to, you know, be willing to play small ball or something. It just doesn't look like there's been any fundamental changes about how they're going to go about their business. And, I mean, same old didn't get it done last year, so why the hell would it get it done this year for the group? You had historical pitching numbers last year. Even if they average out, you're not going to get as good a pitching as you had last season, so you're essentially bound to be worse off than you were. Like, that's not a strategy I'm willing to employ for this team.
No, they. It's easy to say in hindsight, but they probably needed to add a bigger bat in the offseason. I mean, Justin Turner's looked pretty good. I won't judge the Jays fully until I see them in a close game or a few close games, because they haven't had any. But all 4 of the games against Tampa Bay were big spreads, and it really didn't come down to the last couple innings. And obviously yesterday was 10-0. So once I see them in a close game where they've got a runner on first and third and they're down 1 with 2 outs in the 9th, something like that, that's when I can start to judge this team, because that's exactly when they would have grounded into a double play or grounded to short or to first or whatever, and or a bloop to left field that, you know, is an easy catch. That's what happened so much last year. And a big part of the team has to be Vladdy Guerrero Jr. this year. He has to take a step offensively, because everything has to be an inside job. You're not going to bring anyone else in. So
we'll see what happens. Again, 6:10 first pitch. No Jays baseball on your radio tonight. Of course, we'll be focused in on the Flames and the Ducks. This text comes in at 960-960. The fan feedback line is open to you. Just says, once the Flames are done, you guys going to be doing playoff hockey or the Jays? Both.
How about both?
We will do both.
And Stampeders.
No.
No Stampeders?
I mean, we'll talk about the Stampeders. I think that means
what
games we're going to be playing.
Oh, sorry.
We do not have the rights for the Stampeders.
What am I doing?
We'll do Stamps reports. We'll talk about the Stamps.
Right.
But we won't be playing Stamps games. We'll play playoff hockey games and Jays games on the radio, that's for sure.
Best playoffs you'll ever see, maybe?
Could be.
Tune in.
High expectations. Take a break, come back on the other side. 8 games on the NHL schedule on this Tuesday with playoff implications and a lot of them. We'll go through the NHL scoreboard on this Tuesday, closing out hour two next here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. All right, closing out hour two on a Tuesday. Of course, Flames and the Ducks coming your way. 6 o'clock, Flames warm-up. Pat Steinberg, booyah.
What a game.
What a game. He's going to get you all jacked up for the Flames and the Ducks. Dostal v. Markstrom. The rematch of the 2006 Stanley Cup playoff quarterfinal.
And
same players.
Wasn't it 2017 as well?
I don't remember. I just know 2006.
Oh.
Because I was at Game 7 and I was pretty sad.
Ah.
They got shut out in that game. But it doesn't matter. The rivalry still lives on.
Different story tonight.
Here it comes. 7 o'clock, Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson have all the action right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
And there will be action.
Oh, there will be hockey, let me tell you. If you want the Flames and the Ducks, we got it for you. It's going to be hockey.
It's going to happen.
8 NHL games on tap on this Tuesday, including the Flames and the Ducks. No clinching scenarios in today's 8 games. However, some big potential points on the board, Shan.
Yep.
Gets going at 5 o'clock. Capitals, Bruins. Caps have lost 2 straight after they won 3 in a row, but they can move back into third place in the Metro with a win. That's where the Flyers currently are, 1 point ahead of them. It'll also be game number 1,000 for Jeff Skinner.
It's Capitals Sabres, by the way.
Is that what I said?
No, you said Bruins. Bruins play the Predators.
Oh, correction. Yeah, sorry, I meant to say Sabres and the Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Skinner's 1,000th NHL game for the 35-35-5 Buffalo Sabres. And you know how many playoff games Jeff Skinner's played in those 1,000 games?
As many as me.
Yes.
Do you want to hear his favorite songs? He's got a.
I did see this. I didn't read it because I thought he was trolling everyone.
No, I think this is pretty legit. Best of Both Worlds by Hannah Montana. The Climb, Miley Cyrus. 2 different people. We Can't Stop by Miley Cyrus. Clearly a big fan. Another one is What Dreams Are Made Of by Hilary Duff. Great song, And My Heart Will Go On by Celine Dion. Higher Love, Whitney Houston, of course. Let's go with last one, Skater Boy by Avril Lavigne. That's a pretty good list.
It's a banger.
I think they're going to play all those for him tonight.
1,000 NHL games, no playoff games for Jeff Skinner.
That's really sad.
That's tough. Good player, too. Maybe not up to that contract, but good player.
Yeah.
We've also got the Panthers and the Habs at 5. Panthers have clinched a playoff berth. They're looking to tie the Bruins for first in the Atlantic Division. Habs 14 points behind the Washington Capitals. They're not heading to the playoffs this season. Sidney Crosby and the Penguins are in New Jersey to take on the Devils.
Battle of the disappointments?
Pittsburgh's way more disappointing.
Yeah, that's true.
Crosby, however, though, 3 assists away from 1,000 in his career for the Penguins. Devils 1 point behind the Penguins in the standings. Neither one of those teams heading to the playoffs this season. Blackhawks, Islanders, good big game for New York as they try to find a way into that Eastern Conference playoff race. Back-to-back for the Islanders, who are trying to inch closer to the playoff spot. They're 3 points behind the Caps and 4 points at a third in the Metro after that OT win against the Flyers on Monday.
Is it possible for a game to finish 0-0?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
Why?
Well, because they have the potential to do that.
I mean, they could, but, I mean, somebody would win in a shootout and would get a 1.
No, I know, but I don't even know if they'd score in the shootout. It's my
Someone
concern.
Would eventually.
Probably.
You never know, man. So one of those defensemen, like Merrick Malik, just never know. They're going to come up with something. And,
like David Schlemko?
Yeah, the Schlemcat. Sens Wild, 6 o'clock puck drop tonight. Minnesota trying desperately to stay alive in the West. They're not really alive. They're 8 behind the Kings for the second wild card spot. And no Ryan Hartman. He was suspended 3 games by the Department of Player Safety for what they're calling unsportsmanlike conduct after the loss against the Vegas Golden Knights on Saturday. You can define unsportsmanlike conduct, Shan, as throwing your stick at an official.
Three games is far too much. First of all, the official was not close. It's not like he threw a spear at him and he threw it on the ice. Yes, it was in his direction. No, I don't think he should have done that. Three games for that?
You can't mess around with officials, though.
I guess, but
no, no, I'm sorry.
But that's,
I don't, it's officials. They're not there to be thrown at. I don't care if it was a bad throw. They're not there to get hit and punched and
I know
everything else. You can be pissed off all you want. You want to swear at them? Go ahead, be my guest. But
and I'm sure they don't, do.
The official thing, I have no mercy for. It could have been more. As far as I'm, you just don't mess with officials.
No.
Those are. I'm sorry. You can disagree, and they have bad days. They all do, and you get your emotional, and I love that. But don't throw your stick at them.
I know, and I know it's a bad. It's not like a slap on the wrist thing. I know it's very bad to do. I feel like one or two would have been, but we're arguing the difference of one game. It's still bad.
6 o'clock also sees the Bruins in Nashville to take on the Preds. Bruins, of course, home and cool with a playoff berth. They're trying to hold on to first in the Atlantic. Predators have allowed 15 goals in back-to-back losses after an 18-game point streak. They're going to need to shut it down a bit. They're trying to hold on to the first wild card spot in the West, 6 behind Winnipeg for third in the Central Division. And the night closes off with what could be a first-round playoff matchup, or perhaps later on in the Western Conference playoffs, Canucks, Golden Knights. Canucks clinched a playoff berth on Saturday. They're trying to hold on to first in the Pacific. The Golden Knights 5-0-1 in their past six, third in the Pacific, and can move within 3 points of Edmonton with a win. And should note as well, Tomas Hertl, full contact jersey at practice.
Yep.
For Vegas. His debut is around the corner for the Vegas Golden Knights. So they will be getting their big trade deadline acquisition in their lineup
one of
sooner
them.
Than later. No, they've got the other ones.
I guess. No, I'm just saying they had a bunch of big ones at the deadline. It's a scary team.
If they can put it all together, they're definitely going to be a team to watch out for, as always. That's just kind of what they do.
It is what they run things differently. There's no teams in the NHL that run the show like the Golden Knights do.
And, of course, Flames and Ducks, 7 o'clock puck drop right here on Sportsnet 960. You can also watch the game tonight on Sportsnet West. That'll about do it for the show. Lots of Flames content in Hour 1 if you missed any of it. Hour 2, Jay's Talk with Sho Ali, Jay's Report with Shan. Also took a look at a busy NHL schedule on this Tuesday. If you missed any of it on the live show, check us out at 960-96. What are you laughing at?
Sorry. Pick me. My dog got stuck in
you
a
see
well.
What I mean? That's what happens.
Yeah, so for the rest of the week, we'll
That's
go with
enough
those.
Enough of that. 960-960 is the text line. Find us wherever you get your favorite podcast, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher. He's Shan, Cam, my other outstanding producer, alongside our fabulous intern, Simon, this week. Thanks for tuning in. Still to come this afternoon, Real Kipper and Bourne. Steinberg's got Flames talk, and then Flames warm-up coming your way at 6 o'clock tonight, 7 o'clock with Derek Wills and Megan Mickelson. Enjoy the Flames and the Ducks. Back for a Wednesday edition of Sportsnet Today tomorrow. You're on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.